No organisation is an island. Every organisation is intrinsically dependent for their success on the wider social, economic, and environmental context, on both local and global scales. Human-centric organisations see no boundary between what is happening inside and outside their organisations. Instead, they see only relationships, interconnection, and interdependence. In this episode, we hear from Joe and Graham as they discuss why ecology is everything.
If ecology is everything, then I'm interested to hear your thoughts, Graham, on the interconnected nature and how the pandemic has demonstrated how intrinsically connected we are. Tell me a little bit about that.
If we start with the pandemic and talk about organisations, I think that the pandemic revealed what for many was already a really obvious truth, is that we live in an interdependent world. That's to say that we all depend on each other for our collective as well as individual success. And the pandemic demonstrated that. You know, what happened in the food market in Wuhan in China ended up affecting the whole world. Mm. We have to embrace this idea of ecology, this idea that in one way of thinking about that is just interconnectedness and interdependence. And we've seen that powerfully through our response to the pandemic. It's no good one country or one community, you know, tackling COVID. It has to be everybody, you know. So this whole idea that, you know, none of us are safe until all of us are safe captures that interdependence really powerfully. And I think in an organisational context, if we raise our sights and take a kind of helicopter view of the kind of state of the world for a second, we recognise that we face these three interlocking and interdependent huge global challenges. You know, global heating, and we've seen huge disruptions already this year in terms of floods and fires and so on that demonstrate that we're living through an unfolding crisis as far as climate change is concerned. The associated problems of biodiversity loss and the degree to which we're losing species very rapidly in a way that's completely unprecedented in history. And global inequality, you know, the idea that a significant amount of the world's resources are concentrated in the hands of the very few, which can't be good for social cohesion or anything to do with the kind of fabric of society. So if we take those kind of three things, and then we look at organisations, I think, again, human-centric organisations understand this kind of deeper truth that no organisation is an island. You can't pursue individual success in a wider system that's failing. That doesn't make any sense. So every organisation, you know, if an organisation is leading in its sector, if it's leading in its industry, then it's also a leader in society. And it has to play its part in shaping the way in which society works in order to do better itself. You know, there's an interdependence there. What we can't do is see organisations just absenting themselves from the environmental agenda or from the social agenda or from the economic agenda that confronts us all. All those organisations have a part to play. So a human-centric organisation recognises that because they're just groups of people working in service to other groups of people, that the organisations have a responsibility to improve, to support, to shape human systems in service to us all. And so that's what I mean by ecology in the context of the human-centric approach.
And have you got any examples or anything that organisations are doing to bring that to life?
Yeah, I think that there's millions of examples of organisations that are understanding, either through their supply chains or through the way in which they produce material and are thinking about, you know, circular flows so that, you know, we're not just throwing lots of things into landfill and we're, you know, bringing things back into a productive cycle and so on, thinking about energy use, thinking about CO2. There's hundreds, thousands, millions of examples of organisations trying to step up around all of that. But equally, there's lots of organisations that are not. You know, the thinking that's got nothing to do with them, or that, you know, they can free ride on the back of other people's activities and so on, or it's just sort of got everything to do with government and nothing to do with the private sector or organisations more generally. So I think that the reality is that whilst there are some organisations that are stepping up and thinking about, you know, those issues, other organisations are not, and we just need more to be stepping forward rather than to be stepping back.
What are the advantages of an organisation? What are the opportunities for organisations in this space to be doing that? You mentioned before, you know, some of them aren't doing it. We kind of, are they blind? Do they not see the burning platform which they are on?
But
to try and make it more of a encouraging opportunity.
Well, I think the key thing is just that, really, is opportunity. I mean, all organisations exist to create value. Mm. All organisations, you know, are creating value for groups of people. So, you know, if we're in a situation where, you know, the wider circumstances within which an organisation is operating in is not being supportive of human systems, of, you know, of creating the conditions for human flourishing, let's put it like that, then the conditions for them to thrive as an organisation are also going to be impacted. So there's a negative reason to respond, which is unless you do, then things are going to get worse.
But isn't
and
that
so
when
on.
People? Isn't that when organisations and people really change?
Yeah, yeah.
When there is a threat, when the risk is high. I mean, you and I have both been around kind of sustainability and CSR back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
People and organisations, or maybe not people, but organisations changed because they had to.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they could no longer operate the way they're operating.
Yeah.
The reality is, organisations often don't change unless they have to. And I think this kind of idea of sustainability or regenerative economies, we're certainly on a journey, but often organisations change because the risk is so high that if they don't change, then they're no longer being business. So the value, we don't often see it as a look at the opportunities, we see it as the risk. Has that changed now?
Well, I hope so. And it's important that we, you know, that we get beyond just a kind of slightly defensive approach to all of the changes that we see, and recognising also that there's lots of opportunity in there for organisations to step forward, make a difference, and in making a difference.
What's stopping them from doing it? I've been grappling with this for years. Go on.
I think the thing that stops all organisations, you know, all individuals from doing anything is just inertia. You know, is that there's a commitment to the status quo, a commitment to how we've always done things, a commitment to wanting things to stay the same and not change.
So we stick our heels in even more things are happening.
And you know, and that's one of the things that you know that you're pointing to, is where lots of organisations, you know, operate psychologically, not rationally. So if they feel that things that are threatening them, then they'll retreat. If things become uncertain, then they'll try and find a grip on the level of certainty. And you can see that in lots of organisations where you see leaders and managers effectively managing through the rear view mirror, talking about how it was in, you know, if we only can hang on to those kind of times when everything was really certain, then we can, you know, we can move forward into the future. And of course, you know, that's not going to work because things are so dynamic, things are changing so quickly, and the stakes are really, really high. So, you know, you touch on some of the points about, you know, regenerative and restorative practices, whereas organisations are now recognising that we need to move beyond the sort of the rhetoric, never mind the reality of sustainability, where we might, you know, take a little bit less, or, you know, just try and be a little bit more aware of some of our extractive and reductive approaches and so on. And actually, you know, that's not good enough anymore. We need to move to a position where we are regenerating natural resources. You know, we're not just slowing down our extraction, we're actually regenerating them
enhancing them,
right. And there are examples of organisations starting to step up on that agenda, but we just need more, and we need to operate more quickly.
And what's the mindset, do you think, that's required to do that?
I think it's an open-mindedness rather than a closed-mindedness. You know, an open-mindedness, you know, is inquiring. It's looking outside the organisation. It's looking at context. It's looking at the future.
So this idea of constantly sensing.
Right.
Constantly sensing what's going on and being able to adapt our processes, our way of managing, our way of doing things, so that we're learning, we become in a learning mindset rather than predicting what might happen and hoping that it will be as it was 20 years ago and looking for that certainty.
Absolutely.
Is that mindset of going, we just need to be constantly scanning and adapting.
And we see it all the time in the work that we do, don't we? When we take leaders and managers outside of their comfort zone, you know, we take them in put them into very, very different contexts, you know, get them working, you know, in communities or, you know, whatever it is, you know, that shakes them out of their kind of comfortable view. So that they can become more open-minded, to recognise the context within which they're operating in, to break them out of their sort of, you know, their fixed mindsets and, you know, and worldviews about how things work, and help them to realise that things are, you know, might be very different from the assumptions that they made. And that's one of the challenges, I think, for managers and leaders generally, Joe, is not to try and manage and lead your team or your organisation by closing the door, getting on a screen and trying to, you know, trying to dominate it with intellect. It's much more a question now of opening the windows and getting out and seeing what's going on, seeing for yourself or what's happening. And the more that leaders and managers do that, the more that they'll understand the context within which they're operating, and the more that they understand the nature of the relationship that they have with the wider ecology that confronts us all, whether that's society, whether it's economics, or whether it's the environment.
So becoming more comfortable with stepping outside what we know
to be true,
challenging our assumptions, and just acknowledging that we are all interconnected.
Right.
And we know that, right? We know that, as you said before, through the pandemic, we've recognised that more than ever.
Absolutely. But most importantly is to make those human connections, you know, to actually talk to people, to understand their experience, to build that empathy. So rather than make assumptions about different sorts of communities or, you know, different types of cultures or, you know, different circumstances and so on, get out there and find out, experience it.
It's much easier to have our kind of confirmation bias on.
Right.
What are we looking at? What are we seeing to confirm what we already know? Being aware of that.
And that's at the heart of, you know, we'll come on and talk about it, but that's at the heart of what we call the new learning challenge in organisations, which is at the heart of this kind of human-centric approach to making progress. Mm. But right now, I think we've really got to be concerned and make sure that organisations recognise that they're not an island, that the environmental, social and economic circumstances that confront us all are part and parcel of the work that they need to do, that they need to proactively, using the opportunities that are available to them, shape the environment that we all depend on for all of our futures.
And that does make me think that, yes, that's important for organisations, but that's really important for ourselves, regardless of whether or not we're in an organisation or in a family, is to go, how do I start with me? How do I start to challenge some of my own confirmation bias? How am I aware of what's going on in my local community? Am I aware of what's happening?
Yeah.
And my interconnection, connected nature to all of these things.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lesson there in kind of in organisations, yes, but also taking some personal responsibility for our own relationship with these things.
Yeah, I think that's really important. But the ecology argument tells us that it isn't just about individuals. It's about systems, and it's about, and in this context, it's about organisations.
But we are part of the system.
Absolutely. So I'm not disagreeing with you.
I absolutely agree too that the ecology is about how we're all interconnected, but we also play a part in that. So our part in that is also about an understanding of self.
And where
we sit in that. So
yeah, I guess the only thing that I'm thinking is that. Is that I think we've seen too often systems scapegoating individuals. You know, so what I mean is that you know, we end up in a situation where organisations get a free ride because they will say it's just down to individual behaviour. You know, typically individual consumer preference and so on. Well, we only make, you know, cheap clothes because that's what the consumers want, and you know they don't buy. So again, you know, we misunderstand the nature of the system that we're all operating in, and if all we do is pass the responsibility down to individuals, saying it's about individual choice and so on, then we're missing a huge opportunity, as well as failing to meet our responsibilities if we don't require organisations to step up, act in a more human-centric way, and make a difference to the things that affect us all. Because organisations can have a huge impact, a hugely positive impact.
Absolutely, yeah.
In agreement. They choose to do so.
Yeah.
Big thank you to Joe and Graham for taking some time out to record their conversation for us, and a big thank you to you for listening to this episode. If you would like to find out more, you can download the white paper. You'll find the link in the description. Until the next time, take care.